Hi, Dan.
Hola, Jason.
Oh, you're bringing some of that Mexico flavor back with you. Hello. Hola.
Hola.
Daniel.
I'm very quickly out of Spanish because I don't speak Spanish.
I don't either. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
I had to have Lex on the secret podcast.
I know. I didn't realize things had gotten that dire.
Well, a listener suggested it, and I thought, that is a funny joke. And then I thought, wait a second.
And then now we just do whatever the listeners want, huh?
I just texted Lex, and he's like, sure, I could do that. But he wasn't. He was like, sure, I could do that.
Yeah.
Because it's Lex.
Radio voice. He told me he was on the show. He's like, yeah, Jason just called me Dan the whole time. That seems fair.
Yeah. I thought that would be a thing I could do. Say hi, Dan. And he'd be like, And then at the end, I say, bye, Dan. He goes, again, like, very flummoxed about being called Dan.
You think he'd be more used to it, given that we do so many shows together.
And there's so many Dans.
There are so many Dans.
Quite honestly.
League of them.
Yeah. This is a great, we're at peak secret podcast here. I have laundry going, and the trash truck is outside.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I got nothing. It's very quiet here.
Good times. I saw that you wrote a thing. You wrote a thing for Macworld, so you're back in the saddle at least a little bit from your vacation.
Yeah, I'm easing back in. There was some adjustment to the lack of beaches, to the cold weather. My fingers, they don't type like they used to. It was, you know, it's an adjustment. It's fine. I'm soldiering through, though.
That's good.
Playing through the pain.
Get back to work, is what I'm saying. But it's Friday, so forget it. I guess it's over already.
This week is shot.
Yep. Let's see. What else is going on? I did my comic book story, finally.
Yes, I saw that. I was intrigued to see more about... And your conclusion, I think, was that the 11-inch iPad is a pretty good... device for reading comics is how
I mean, I'm a 12.9 user and I still am, but the fact is the 11-inch one is so much lighter. Like it's lighter and it's easier to hold in one hand, and the dimensions of the display that grew when they took out the bezels and the home button and all of that are the dimensions of a comic book,
right?
And so it is, you can see more of it and it's light. So I think for most people, yes, two page spreads, you know, you can't really view them in horizontal mode and read them. So you kind of have to zoom and pan, which on the 12.9, you can, just rotate and read the whole spread in the horizontal view. And it's very nice. But it was an opportunity also to not just appreciate the hardware and how the both of these are really great for reading comics, but to survey the apps again and find out that it's kind of a grab bag where there are, many of the apps have been updated for the new screen sizes in the iPads, but there are quirks like Chunky, which is a really great... a reader for non-DRM comic files, of which there are plenty of ways to get those legitimately. It's not just kind of a piracy tool. It's using the full display size, but it keeps the home indicator lit, which you're supposed to... I mean, the developer just needs to fix that, because it's supposed to fade away when you're viewing content and not hover there. But, like, Comixology has been updated, and they go to the top of the screen, but they basically leave space at the bottom where the home indicator would be, but they fade the home indicator, so then it goes away, and there's just this... They're not going down to the bottom of the screen. It's kind of baffling. Marvel Unlimited doesn't do anything. It hasn't been updated yet.
Shocking.
I did download DC Universe, which I got the 7-day trial of that and checked that out. And that, because it's a new app, you might expect that they were on top of the whole iPad screen size thing. And they are. It's the first time I've really done the math. Because my feeling about Marvel Unlimited is always that that app keeps getting better, even though it hasn't been updated for the iPad yet. I'm sure they'll get there, but keeps getting better. And it's $69 a year. And it is so easy to read $69 worth of comics that if you're a Marvel fan, it's just like, it's a no-brainer for me.
I just saw my renewal for that go by a couple weeks ago and thought, I actually haven't read anything in the Marvel Unlimited app for a while. And part of it was because I lost track of where I was in so many of the series, which is my biggest, remains my biggest annoyance with that app.
You can't subscribe to a series and then have the new issues pop in. I agree.
So frustrating. Because now I'm just like, do I have to go back and try to figure out where I was?
I just looked at what they posted this week and see, is there something in there? Did I miss one of those issues and all that? But you're right. It could be better. But the point is, for $69, I remember I took one trip and read enough issues on the plane to pay for Marvel Unlimited if I had bought those issues individually. Yeah. But the DC Universe thing, so DC is $75 a year, so it's a little bit more than Marvel Unlimited, but you get, and it's got a smaller selection of comics than Marvel offers, but in addition to the comics, it's got like TV shows that are, because it's also a streaming service. It's not just a comic service. So I thought, like, if you want to watch Titans and you want to read a bunch of DC comics, you're a DC comics fan, $75 a year, it's probably will pay for itself in terms of like comic reading pretty quickly. Plus, it's got a whole TV streaming service. So, and the app is good. The app is a perfectly fine modern app. So I was impressed with that. I got to try that out.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I brought my iPad with me on vacation, thinking that I'm, you know, obviously besides like entertaining myself on the plane, that I might actually get a little of my own work done. And I actually did. Like, I wrote a few times on my iPad using our good friend Scrivener. Just had to make sure all my projects was updated before I left.
Yes.
But it worked pretty well, and I actually found it a delight, especially sitting, you know, in the our little restaurant.
I saw your picture. I saw your
pictures. Looking at the beach. I was remarkably productive, I have to say. I mean, I didn't write every day. I wrote like 2 or 3 days. But yeah, I do like the iPad a lot for that. I have to admit confess to covetous glances at the new iPads, but as I have a 10.5 inch from like last year, I can't really justify to buy a new one right now.
Yeah. Yep. I can see it, but it's for something like writing using Scrivener, iPad, I mean, it's compact and it does the job, and I use mine. That's my mobile device. I don't even travel with a laptop anymore. So, speaking of which, I spent part of yesterday, I think I'm going to write it up today because Friday is my day where I write up wacky automation things that I do. I feel like it's Friday afternoon, time for a wacky automation post. I do that sometimes. Laundry is draining now. The just for the play-by-play because people love it. So Six Colors is posted with Movable Type, the venerable blogging software that nobody except me and John Gruber runs now. And I do it mostly because I know the templating language by heart because I've been using it for 15 years and I needed to implement a template and didn't want to learn how to template in WordPress. Okay, so we're using Six Colors. And also I'm using it for The Incomparable, but that's a widely modified, insane version that is like 10 blogs all interrelated and it's using custom plugins and all of that. But the Six Colors one is pretty vanilla. It's got some custom fields, but that's about it. Matthew Castanelli, who used to work at Apple on Shortcuts, he was one of the original workflow team. He's on his own now and he's doing videos about automation and he's got a podcast. And he was talking about how he wanted a shortcut so that he could post the latest episode of his podcast on his site. And I thought, hey, Dan and I do that, and I'm really annoyed by it because we have to fill out a bunch of custom fields and all that. I wonder if I could do that. And then I looked at Matthew's shortcut, and its key component for posting to his blog is the WordPress app's actions. And I was like, oh, well, there's none of that. And at that point, rather than giving up, I embarked on investigating the XML RPC posting interface back end that lets third party apps like Mars Edit post to Movable Type blogs. Like,
I just want to say this is a great treatment for the next Indiana Jones movie.
Oh my God. the caves I went in for this. Woo. So I did. I figured it out. I had to ask Daniel Jalkut, the author of Mars Edit, for help at one point. and I got some help from Matthew Cassinelli, but I managed to figure out how to get shortcuts to do an XML post to the CMS for Six Colors to Movable Type and create a new post. And then I had to do a bunch of like things that were parsing, you know, using shortcuts to, for the podcast one, like grab an RSS feed item and then parse it, because I need to get the title of the podcast out and I need to get the link to the podcast out and all of those things that we do. Because, you know, when you post links to Clockwise and The Rebound, you have to, you know, you have to get the description, you have to get the title of the episode, mm-hmm. you've got to get the MP3 URL of the episode, yeah, and yeah. the link to the show notes show page of the episode. So the RSS thing that comes with shortcuts will grab an item, which is great. And that item, I just say grab the latest one, and podcasts are RSS feeds, so it totally works. And that'll get me the title, and it'll get me the show page, and it'll get me the description. What it won't get me is the MP3 URL.
Because it's an enclosure,
It's an enclosure, and yeah. and for whatever reason, the workflow shortcuts team did not anticipate that one might want to get the enclosure out of an RSS item, which I would say is maybe a feature request I should make. But I asked Matthew Cassinelli about it, and he said, well, here's what you do. Take the link to the show page and then load the show page HTML and find the MP3 in it.
Scrape it?
Uh-huh. Which
oh,
I did. So that totally worked. It took me a little bit, but I figured that out. And yeah, so I now have a shortcut that will, if I pick which podcast I want to post to Six Colors, and it will go to the RSS feed, get the latest one, go to the show page, pull the MP3 file, populate it all in an XML request, send it to the Movable Type server, and then it gets back from the Movable Type server the unique document ID, basically, that's on the server for that post. Every post on a Movable Type installation has a unique ID. And it opens the CMS in Safari, then open to that page. And then you can edit it and press post, and it'll post it. And it totally works. And in fact, if you go to Six Colors and you see that I linked to this week's episode of Download, titled No, This Is Terrible, that was generated by the shortcut.
Wow.
And it totally worked. So I also built one that I write most of my posts on iOS in OneWriter. And I wrote a version of this same shortcut that once you're done with your article in OneWriter, you basically run the run a little keyboard shortcut in there, and it kicks off a shortcut action that basically grabs the file out of Dropbox, because that's where I save it. It's not actually passing the text through a URL scheme, because
right.
that seems insane.
That seems, yep.
Yeah. So it passes the file name, and it goes to my stories folder in Dropbox and grabs that file and does the same thing. It composes. Oh, it looks for the, if you have an H1 header for a title, mm-hmm. it grabs that and then suggests, do you want this to be the title? And if it doesn't find one, it just asks you what you want the title to be. And then it does the same thing. It goes through, and actually that one, I have a little dialogue that pops up that says, do you want this to just go live, or do you want to post it as a draft? And then either way, it pushes you to that that web page with the with all the stuff filled in properly, categorized and everything, and then you can just decide what you want to do from there, which essentially it gets me out of having to fill in a whole bunch of boxes using the web right. interface and Movable Type, which is what you and I have to do when
great.
We're not using Mars Edit or something
yep.
like that. So
yep.
And that
yeah,
totally works.
Nobody was ever going to be making a Movable Type client for iOS, probably.
Exactly. Probably not, unless it was me in shortcuts, which I did. So I did ask Daniel Jalkut at a couple points, like, how do I encode this? Because it's rejecting my story body. And he said, well, it's XML, so you can do it a couple of different ways. And he said, you can just put it in a C data block, which is this thing that I already mm-hmm. know how to do, because that's what I do for RSS feeds for podcasts or show notes. How do you put a whole HTML document inside an item? Is you put it in this C data block, and it basically
right,
is
sure.
you're telling XML, ignore everything in here. This is just content.
And
that totally worked. So thank you to Jalksy for doing that. So it works. It's kind of amazing, and it will save me some time. It's not like a total revolutionary. I didn't build an entire blog posting engine inside of Shortcuts, but it does let me basically go with a keyboard shortcut and a tap or two from my story in the text editor in iOS to being in the CMS ready to go live. Or live, depending.
Right, right.
I did a clone of Six Colors as a separate blog in Movable Type to test all of this because, you know, I wasn't going to test it on
the live site.
That was probably a problem. And the best part, I haven't even said the best part yet. The best part, this is the spelunking part. This is my Indiana Jones part, is I didn't understand why every single post that I posted was live. You may have noticed this with Mars Edit, that when you post something with Mars Edit, it's live?
I think I have mentioned this in the past. Yeah, this was an issue I ran into. If you told it to be unpublished, it would not respect that.
It still goes live, right? So I did some Google searching. I finished my column for Tom's Guide this week at the local Starbucks, and then I just sat there and was like, I'm going to figure this out. And I did some Google searching, which led me to a post that said, isn't it funny that Movable Type even if you tell it it's a draft, it wants to post it live? And I said, yes, it is funny. He linked to this post, linked to another blog, and said, now I needed to do something way more complex involving setting posts for the future. But of course, this is already a solved problem if all you want to do is mark it as a draft. And I thought, oh, tell me more. And I clicked on that link, which took me to a blog by Jay Allen, who is an early days blogger guy who wrote a lot of stuff about blog APIs and stuff. And it was a blank page. So I went to archive.org, I put it in, found it, pulled it up. It's a blog post from like 2005, in which he details the obscure. Super obscure, maybe completely obscure. There's a one line kind of a setting in Movable Type that you have to put into the mt.cfg file, the config file on the server,
that says
let the posting API determine whether something goes live or not. Now why? There's a reason his blog post actually. Okay, it's even better than that. The comment to the blog post, the first comment on this blog post that's on archive.org, is from a user named Ben, who is totally Ben Trott, who is one of the co-founders of Six Apart, the company that made Movable Type, because it was a small world back in 2005,
right,
is what
sure.
I'm saying. And he basically says, oh, this is why we did it that way. Because there's like a bunch of circumstances where what you don't want is for the API to post, there's a very specific circumstance where you're editing or posting a new item, and it was broken if you had the ability to set it as a not live or something like that. So they set this as a setting, an esoteric setting. Anyway, I sitting there at the Starbucks, I opened Prompt, the terminal app or SSH app for iOS, and SSH to the incomparable server, and literally just opened VI. For mt.cfg and pasted this in out of the archive.org blog from 2005, colon wq, saved it, went back and ran my script again, totally fixed it. So, and the best part might be that the blog post that I had to go to archive.org to get says at the top, I'm probably one of only four people who cares about this. And I told this story to Greg Noss, who is our server administrator and the Movable Type. He is the world's foremost authority on Movable Type at this point. And his comment was, you really ought to send an email to Jay Allen saying, it's five people now.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, though. It was probably a bell curve, right? It was four people in 2005.
Yeah,
maybe it went up for a little over there, but it's back to being four people.
it's nobody. Now it's literally me. I did, when I finally did this, I did send a note to Gruber about it because basically what I said in my text to him was, you are literally the only other person who might be impressed by this because he uses Movable Type too. Anyway, it was a fun little adventure, and I think I got a productivity boost out of it in the end, that I've got this thing that will let me automate this stuff. And the larger issue is that, like, I remember when Federico was really excited when they added this the get content from URL block inside of workflow, and I get it now, which is like literally any web API, anything you can attach via a web request, Shortcuts can do. it's kind of amazing because, like, there are so many different things that have a web API where if you go to a certain URL and say, boop, here's some data, things happen. Right. And for me, I got to, you know, Shortcuts is talking to a piece of ancient for the internet software, and it totally works. It's great. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, you know, it's always rewarding when you go on those long. I've spent some hours like delving into the command line on my, you know, my Linode server and stuff like that, trying to get some esoteric piece of software to work. And like, then you've got like 18 tabs open in your web browser because like everybody's got one little piece of the puzzle, like as you were finding, and you've got to somehow synthesize that into a coherent whole. You know, about half the time, you really only know partially what you're doing anyways. Like, do I understand the theory behind all of the things I do on my, you know, Linux server? No, definitely not.
Yeah.
But I know just enough to be dangerous.
Yep. It's, anyway, it was a fun little adventure. I may write a version of that up. I have some stuff I learned along the way. So like the XML posts, there's some issues like the XML, and this is actually an issue with you using Mars Edit as well. Our server is currently on HTTP and not HTTPS, which means everything is sent open, and the XML RPC spec sends your password open.
Oh, to clear text, yeah.
Yeah, that's not the best. I mean, granted, it's an API posting password. It's not actually your CMS password, but still, if somebody wanted to reverse engineer API posting, they could do that. So I need to do some certificate upgrading. I'll let you know if you suddenly can't post to the website. We'll figure it out. So I have to work on that. I did have that moment where I realized I don't want to keep coding my password into my shortcut. So what I did, and I did this at the Starbucks too, it was actually pretty funny. I had this moment where I thought, what if I just put my password in a text file in like iCloud Drive and loaded it from there in the shortcut? Totally worked. Amazing. I actually started to think, this is dangerous because then you start to think things like, this could turn into like a settings file that it reads. And then, actually would be kind of cool.
How much can you abstract, right?
Well, like, right, because then I could give it to you. And I could say, here, Dan, here's the shortcut. All you need to do is edit the settings file, put this file in your iCloud Drive, and put in your own username and password, and then
everything
just works again. That would be cooler than, Dan, edit the XML text block in 10 places.
You're taking me back to my web development days.
Let
me write a database abstraction layer for you.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create an Airtable database that it queries. Yes. Nope, that's not going to happen. But anyway, that was a fun little thing where I was like, can I do this? And again, like iOS, for all of the strange things about it, I was able to sit there and build this thing and pull out the password and put it in a text file. And
that's a great point, that it's a weirdly bifurcated operating system in that way, because like you're saying, there's tremendous power there. Some of it, you know, really like just for power users, people who really want to delve into this. And at the same time, like yesterday, I was also writing, I used OneWriter as well. I was writing my Macworld column in it, and I had the split view open for, you know, so I could refer to some stuff in a web page on the other side. And like, split view, let me tell you, still a janky piece of, like, still a janky feature. Like, certain, like, all of a sudden the menu bar is in the wrong place. Keyboard focus, or it's covering the toolbar at the bottom of Safari with the back and forward buttons, and you have to, like, tap around to try and get it to, like, go back to Safari. And it's like, how are you so good at these things, and yet so bad at this?
And I just keep feeling like, I mean, Federico wrote about this in Mac Stories a bunch, like, and Steve Trotton Smith, I remember, did a whole rant about this because of the way Windows does the multi-pane kind of thing. And the answer is, it's very clear that Apple has to refine this interface.
Sure,
and the frustration is that they decide to take 2 years between refining these interfaces. And so, you know, it's better than it was the first, you know, three years ago when they did this.
Right.
But we're still a year out from the third iteration where they need to show which pane is in focus, maybe use keyboard shortcuts to get between, you know, side A and side B. There's like all these refinements they need to do. But yeah, I can't tell you how many times I have tried to open the URL bar in Safari only to do something in OneWriter, or try to copy something in Safari and ended up that the focus was on the other side, or vice versa. Like, it's just
start typing random text into my OneWriter document.
Well, What's exciting about it is that it reminds me of, you know, days long gone by where computing platforms were not as sort of mature and static as they are now, where there was frustration at things that they couldn't do and also excitement when you could find strange ways to get what you wanted out of them.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And you know, those are not... I mean, stable and mature is what most people want, right? But it is kind of fun to be on the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
For
I will say,
some people.
One of the interesting things, I don't know if you've played around with this at all, but it's been floating around, is, and I think it's only on a test flight, this app ISH.
Oh, I have it. Yeah, I signed up for the test flight.
I have that. I installed it. I played around with it for like, you know, 5 minutes or something. But like, essentially, it's a... Is it a V? I don't know if it's a VM or what, but
it
like,
is. It's Intel. It's an Intel Linux on Intel in a VM.
Yeah, in an iOS app.
So it's
bananas. Layers.
Yeah. Well, and what gets me about it is, I think the best thing about ISH for me is that it's basically a challenge to Apple saying,
are you going to let us get away with this?
Well, also, like, you could do this. Like, wouldn't it be better to have a secure shell interface, like a terminal in iOS that you could do and you could compile apps on it and it could write files out to the shared file area, but be in a sandbox, right? Like, because ISH does that, but it's not,
you can access stuff from the Files app, right? I noticed it shows up as a destination in the Files app, which is... wacky, like just very strange. I mean, I don't have a lot of practical use for it, but the fact that it is as a, like, you know, proof of concept demonstration, it's incredibly impressive. Like, kind of, maybe I'll compile a web server on it.
Yeah, What did I do? I installed curl on it.
And I think I installed just the nano text editor so far, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's, and I'm unclear on how you actually, where the mount point is, where you can get like files written out and have them show up in the file, you know, in the Files app, basically, because that's what you want. But it is, yeah. I just look at that and I say, this is the kind of thing that Apple probably should do. Since they're the platform vendor, and you know, this is where everybody goes, oh, but they can't do that because, which comes back to what is honestly my least favorite thing about people who love Apple, which is they simultaneously believe that Apple can do anything and nothing, depending on which one suits them. And it's like, Apple is brilliant, they can do all of these things, but then if you say, here's a thing that Apple doesn't do that they should do, they're very quick to be like, oh, no, Apple can't do that. And it's like, Apple can't think their way out of a paper bag. No, I think they can. I think they're kind of brilliant at it. Like,
I mean, it's kind of like the people who insist, like, both that there's, like, evil government conspiracies and that the government is inept. You can't actually do both of those things.
Which is it? Is there a giant conspiracy, or do they have no idea what they're doing?
It's an inept conspiracy
that nobody knows about. So this is an example of that, which is, like, there are lots of people who would be like, no, you could never give shell access in any way in iOS, because that would be, not only is it against Apple's some sort of code that is unstated and maybe was there 10 years ago, but is it still there? But like, though, the security ramifications, like, I get that there are security ramifications. Apple has incredibly smart security people, for one. And I'm not saying there's a magical golden key here. I'm saying I think they could put in the work and come up with something that would be sandboxed. You know, they're not going to have access to the file system. It is going to be something like ISH, where you still have the ability to do this. And if not a shell, then a development environment. And I do think that they will probably get there at some point. But I know that for me, like, a lot of the productivity boosters that I have on my Mac are shell scripts. I fire it off and it might call a binary, but it's doing a bunch of little, like, simple stuff using shell scripts in the background, and I don't even see them, right? I'm just using an automator plugin in the Finder that gives me a command to run, but it's incredibly powerful. And, so it's not for everybody, but I would love to see more like that. And so I just like ISH as a proof of concept to say, you know, you could do this. You could do this in a secure way and still have it be useful.
I can see why philosophically Apple just may not think like that's something they need to do, But I agree with you that there's no, that's not an indication that they couldn't do it. I certainly believe that there's, you know, they probably don't prioritize it.
Sure.
Put it that way.
Oh, totally.
You know, like, but it's like, feasible.
How about
it's totally
multitasking
feasible.
Being better
right.
and
well,
having
yeah,
keyboard
exactly.
focus and stuff.
Yeah. But your point of like having a development environment is like, that's going to become an issue at some point, right? Like if
yes.
they're going to want the iOS devices to be self-sufficient, you're going to need to be able to build apps on them.
Yeah,
that may not involve a command line, but
maybe.
It will almost certainly involve some sort of development environment.
Yeah, yeah, and I just wonder at some point if you might as well have it be. I mean, the difference between ISH and something that Apple might do will probably be that, you know, it, ideally what you'd like is something that is not running in a virtual machine that is emulating Intel, where you
right.
have lost huge amounts of processor power by doing that. Ideally, you'd want it to run natively, even if it's in a sandbox. But I don't know. Maybe they'll do it or not. It's fun. It's a fun idea, although not particularly useful, especially since it is kind of isolated from the rest of the system. One thing that I've noticed that is going around, which I think is pretty funny, is a lot of people... So Luna Display is shipping, and they are a sponsor of some of the podcasts that I'm on. But I was a Kickstarter backer, and so I bought one. And what I've noticed is a bunch of people who have done this thing where they're like, oh, I've got a new Mac Mini and I've attached the Luna Display to it. And now I have a Mac on my iPad, because Luna Display is basically like a if you're on a local network with your Mac with the Luna Display attached, you can do high resolution, fast screen sharing, hardware accelerated screen sharing. Mm-hmm. So it's faster than screens. And it totally works, and it's pretty cool. It is kind of funny to have people be like, aha, now I can run a Mac on an iPad. But it's not a bad thing. It's just like when I said that I was calling up an SSH window into my server using prompt on my iPad at Starbucks. It's like, yeah, that's kind of cool. I mean, it's not on my iPad, but it's on a server I can get to. So it's not quite the same, but it's not that far off.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
There's definitely possibilities with that. And that's the thing, is like, it's an interesting situation to be in when there's so many. We're at this inflection point now where it's like so many things are getting more complex, and, you know, there are so many more devices out there and so much technology is merging together that it's a question of like, well, how do we make all these things work together? Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. It's. Oh, the cat's here. Everybody,
oh,
hooray, the cat's here. So, yeah, well, it's fun to play around with this stuff. I will say that. And that's part of, I think, what we do that I love, which is a lot of times we're doing things that are not necessarily practical today, but what we're trying to do is get a sense of what is possible, and also to try to, like, get a sense of what the boundaries are. And that's
right.
That's fun. So I think where you can lose the plot is when you start to say, why don't they do this? Because everybody could do it. And you lose the idea that it's actually not, most people won't do it. Like, you can lose track and think that your use case as a person on the cutting edge is suddenly the proper use case. So it's always worth keeping that in mind. But it is kind of fun to push those boundaries and get a sense of where the, you know, where the boundaries on a system like the iPad are.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anything else? You're welcome back to the United States, Dan.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here.
Computers.
And real life comes back once again. There's no escaping it.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, we can go in anywhere. We can check back in next week. You settled back in now, or are you traveling again for the holidays?
I mean, there's holiday travel coming up in a couple weeks. I'll be going to upstate New York for Christmas this year.
Oh, nice.
Which is first time in a couple of years. Last couple of years, we've convinced our family basically to come to Boston because there were more of us in Boston. But this year, we've got literally the whole family coming.
Wow.
Which is nuts. It's been a while. Like, we had a big party in July for my aunt's 80th and my mom's 75th, and we had almost everybody. But like, one of my cousin's husbands like had to work last minute and couldn't make it. But I think we're getting the whole clan together for Christmas, which will be quite something. So
yeah, that's cool.
we'll see how that plays out. Last night I was visiting with my parents. We're like, how are we going to feed all these people?
Is there like a family like cabin or something up there, or somebody's house up there?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are still, yeah, my aunt and uncle still live up there, and some of my cousins live up there, so there's still a concentration of people in the area. And we've, you know, before getting people to come to Boston, basically I'd gone there for every single Christmas, so it's nice to be able to go back up there again. It feels very Christmas-like to have to like go away for Christmas rather than having people come to Christmas. That was always a weird adjustment for me, because I had spent like the first, you know, 35 plus years of my life going to the same place. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, everybody will come to you. And you're like, ah, what is it like to have Christmas in my own house? This is bizarre. But yeah, so it will be a lot of fun. There will be plenty of I missed my Thanksgiving dinner because we were on a plane, and Mexico really doesn't do the Thanksgiving thing. So I am very much looking forward to my Christmas dinner, so I can get in some pie and some ham and some turkey and all that good stuff. That'll be my holiday dinner for the year.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will be back then next week.
Indeed.
And until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.